We have some happy news and some sad news to share about the International Crane Foundation today on the show. Larry Mueller here. Two guests for you. Great to have George Archibald with us, co-founder and senior conservationist. George, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
Yeah, nice to see you again, Larry.
It's been a while. It's good to see you.
Yeah.
Rich Belfast with us as well. He's president and CEO of the International Crane Foundation. And Rich, good to see you.
Great to see you. Thanks. Glad to be on today.
Well, as we talk about the International Crane Foundation, I hope you'll join in. Have you spotted any whoopers this spring? What questions do you have about crane behavior? Join in. You can call us at 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us to ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. Well, we heard some sad news, I guess, about the whooping crane, Gee Whiz, recently. George, tell us about him.
Well, he had a very good life. He lived to be 39 years old, and he passed away at the side of his mate in their little house in Crane City at the Crane Foundation. And over those many decades, he produced many offspring. There are actually as many as 170 descendants from him. Of course, a lot of them have passed away too. But he was a very important bird. He was our first whooping crane to hatch at the Crane Foundation back in 1982. And his mother was an unusual bird because she was imprinted or only would associate with humans. And that's the one I had to work with in the spring for several years to get her to lay an egg and through artificial insemination produce Gee Whiz. And her parents were very important because they were alive when there were only 26 whooping cranes in the world. So wow. Genes have been able to go through Tex, go through Gee Whiz, and are now out in the wild in our new flock of whooping cranes in both Louisiana and Wisconsin. So although he died, he had a great life. We were sad to lose him, of course, but we are very thankful for all he contributed.
Well, what did his birth do for the program? That had to have been wonderful. For the program.
Yeah, that was great. We celebrated by being invited on the Johnny Carson show when Gee Whiz was 3 weeks old. And that was quite a very interesting experience for me. I was worried they were going to make a fool out of me, but they were very kind.
There you go. Well, Rich, let's get you involved here. We've got some good news to talk about. You're opening up soon.
We are opening up. Everyone kind of feels that we're all spring stir crazy as we get greener outside and everything. But we know we can open up safely this year. We were actually shut down for a couple of years, in part due to the pandemic, but also to do just a really stunning facelift for our site. So we're so excited to show it off. We have 10 new exhibits and a beautiful new visitor center up in Baraboo. And we are really excited about showing it off for everyone. So we'll open to the public on May 1st. If there are, of course, lingering pandemic issues, we will do maybe time ticketing or other things. But we're hoping, given that we're sitting on hundreds of acres and all, that we can welcome people in safely and get you all back out to see our site. We're really excited to do that.
Yeah, I can't wait to get back up there and to see all the new things that are going to be there. I imagine the COVID, it had to affect the bottom line for sure, I would think.
Yeah, like everyone, it was a tough year, but we were pretty amazed at how our supporters and, all our members stuck with us. And, it turned out it was, of course, overall a really terrible year for everyone. But we had a pretty good year and we're really excited. And, one of the things I'm just delighted about with as we open up our site is, all of our exhibits have really nice plantings and wetlands now, and they really are going to connect people up with where we work. everywhere in the world. And I think people will really come away with a visit from a visit with just a great sense of the worlds of crane, the world of cranes, and the need for conservation everywhere, and all that good stuff. So it'll be really fun to see how people see it and respond.
Tina in Trempealeau has a question, so let's go there. Hi, thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Yeah, I sighted my first sandhill crane of the season yesterday, and was really excited. And I was noted that over this last year, I used to participate in the crane count in the area, and all of that just went away this last year. So my question is, how has the pandemic affected those bird counts, those local bird counts?
Thank you for calling.
Yeah. Yeah, great question. Thanks for asking. Yeah, we had, especially, you know, you remember back in that period, March, April, May, and all last year when the pandemic was really rising up, and there was just so much uncertainty about what we could do safely and all. So we suspended a lot of normal activities in the spring last year, and then we're able to get a lot more field work going by summer in the fall. And we know that, for example, crane counting can be done safely by individuals at places. And we have a lot of our teams out doing crane monitoring this year, including monitoring all those whooping crane descendants of Gee Whiz that are out in the wild in Wisconsin now. So we are carrying on with our monitoring programs and hoping that the crane count will go through on a sort of individual level this year, even though we still have some constraints, of course, with the pandemic.
Yeah. George, how's the pandemic affected your work with the foundation?
Oh, actually, although there are many sad things about the pandemic, I was very happy to be home for a change. In 2019, I was traveling 200 days, and I never realized how tired I actually was until I discovered what it's like to be normal. But my 2022 is already filling up, so I better take a good rest and get prepared for it.
So what are you doing with all that traveling? I know it has to do with a lot of it has to do with the, with cranes of one sort or another.
Well, one of the things I do is I take people that are interested on three different trips. In February of next year, I take a group to Bhutan, a little country on the south slope of the Himalayas, where the black-necked cranes from Tibet come in the winter. I've been going there since 1996. Of course, I couldn't go last year. So I take that trip. And another fascinating country I experience with friends is Mongolia, out on the huge grasslands. And we do that in June when spring is coming and five species of cranes are found out there. Those are members' trips, and then I'm involved in a lot of programs in Thailand, in China, in Russia, and sometimes in Ethiopia, although Rich does most of the work in Africa. I've been there a few times, so yeah, I get around. And then I also have to travel a great deal in the United States to meet our supporters and give presentations and so on. And it's great to see everybody. I'm looking forward to getting back on the road, actually, to see all my friends far and wide.
Well, Rich, I know people say there's, and some people may not know that there's a lot more to the foundation than the center in Baraboo. And sort of, I think George is getting to that a little bit. But talk about what else the foundation does.
Yeah, thank you. Right. Yeah. One of my great joys when I give tours for people, you know, at our center in Baraboo is having people really see the breadth of all we do everywhere. And, you know, like George said, this is a year where a lot of us here in Wisconsin weren't able to travel. But, you know, our programs we have are all over the world. We actually have a registered office in China. We have a big team in China doing work on 8 different crane species there, and big programs in Africa. We have offices in Uganda and Kenya and Zambia and South Africa. So we have all these programs because most of the endangered cranes of the world, other than our whooping cranes here, are over in Asia and Africa. So the greatest need for our teams and our work on the ground is really in quite a few countries overseas. And so George and I have been going back and forth for decades now for that work, but we have wonderful teams on the ground that we support. And, you know, I just want to say they really shined this last year without us. You know, I'm just really proud of all the great work everybody got done, you know, on their own, just the wonderful teams we have in all these countries that were, you know, persevering through the pandemic, helping the cranes and doing a lot of help for the communities that support the cranes. They were even delivering emergency food supplies to some of the communities we work with and doing all kinds of stuff to really make a difference in those places. So like George said, it was sort of a sad year, but really a good year in some ways too. I think we really deepened our bond with people who work to save cranes. So that was, you know, that was a good story this last year.
It was indeed. And I do want to talk with you some more about what kinds of activities those folks are involved in as they work with the cranes. And I certainly also want to talk about more about what's going on right here in the U.S. and specifically in Wisconsin. And we'll get to that. But we're going to take a quick look at the news and weather and find out what else is in store for us here on the Ideas Network. And our guests today are Rich Belfast, President and CEO of the International Crane Foundation, George Archibald, great to have him back too. He's co-founder and senior conservationist of the International Crane Foundation. You can join in too. The number to call 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us to ideas@wpr.org. Some callers online, but there's a line open for you, and we'll get you on pretty quickly right after we take this look at the news. Stay with us. I'm Larry Mueller for the Ideas Network. Thanks so much for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here, taking a look at the work of the International Crane Foundation with two great guests. George Archibald, he's co-founder of the foundation and senior conservationist. Rich Belfast is president and CEO of the International Crane Foundation. So, have the sandhills arrived in your area yet? What questions do you have about whooping cranes? Join in the conversation. Give us a call. The number is 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us to ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. Jim in Mauston emailed to say a couple of days ago there were two cranes flying a quarter mile up or so. The day was clear and the sun interfered a little bit with his viewing, but they seemed to be circling in a small circle, maybe 100 yards across. And below would have been a creek bed or a marshy area. And he's wondering if all that circling, were they looking at finding a place to take up residence and nesting?
Okay,
Rich,
I can handle that one.
Or George?
Go for it, George. Yeah.
There are two reasons for circling. Number one is when a pair establishes a territory, they will fly around it at very low altitude to check for intruders, which they will then drive away. They're very territorial birds. They have to protect their food source, frogs and fishes and so on, so that they're assured that they have enough food for their chicks when they hatch. The other reason they circle, and it's usually not very low, but they go very, very high. They circle up, 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 up until they get the proper crosswinds, apparently. Then they fix their wings like a vulture, become very stiff, and glide, pushed by the tailwinds and gravity. and they can travel great distances during migration, but it's usually many thousands of feet above. So maybe the pair that he observed were on their way up, or maybe they were trying to kick somebody out.
and they're pretty good. They can be pretty intimidating to predators as well.
Well, predation is very heavy on the young cranes, but the adults are pretty formidable. They'll go straight for the eyes of a predator. And I've observed many times when they see a predator, what they do is they run towards it. They don't run away from it. They want to keep their eye on it, and if need be, they will attack it. And the predators have great respect for them. The danger is when the cranes are young, the predators will sneak up through the grass and grab the chicks at the right moment. So the adult cranes are very, very wary of predators.
Hmm. Jeanette in Kenosha has a question. Let's go there. Hi, Jeanette.
Hi. Well, I was very saddened to hear about the whooping crane who died in captivity.
But Gee I mean, whiz.
He must have had a wonderful life. He lived to be 39. I have two questions. Is that the normal lifespan for a whooping crane? And also, what's going to happen to his mate? Is she going to be all alone?
Well, in the wild, they live to be about 20 to 25 years, not much more. And most of their breeding is between the ages of, say, 4 and maybe 12 to 15. Then they sort of taper off. So he was well beyond the normal lifespan of a wild crane. But we have a lot of other cranes in captivity that have lived for a very, very long time because, you see, they have health care.
Jeanette, thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Well, John in Fox City called to ask, how can he attract cranes to his land? Rich, you got any comments on that?
Sure. Well, a lot of as George was talking before about the birds kind of flying up in the air and scoping out their habitat, they're looking for nice open areas. You know, they breed in wetlands. They, of course, a lot of our cranes like corn, as we know, and most of the cranes in Wisconsin migrating through are now feeding on old waste grain and on cornfields and around those areas. So they're looking for that kind of habitat on those wetlands. And a lot of the work we do, like keeping out invasive species that come in and reduce that open area, allow predators to hide and have more access to cranes and things like that. So a lot of the work that we do even around the world is trying to keep wetlands healthy and keep them as good places that would attract cranes. So my first response would probably be if he has a wetland on his land, if he's a landowner out somewhere in rural Wisconsin, having a healthy, attractive wetlands to cranes is probably the best way to start. Cranes will sometimes come to feeders and all. We don't really promote that for a lot of reasons. As George was saying, they can be scary to predators and they can be scary to people too, roaming around in your yard if you get them too habituated. So we like to keep them wild and out on natural foods or on farm foods as best as possible. But that's a good way to start.
You know, I want to go back to our caller who I had a second question. I don't think we got to it. Was what happens to Gee Whiz's mate now that Gee Whiz is gone?
Well, cranes sometimes are so bonded to their mate that they will not pair with another bird. And there are even instances in the wild of a crane dying of starvation and just sticking around where the mate was killed or died. And but we have found at the Crane Foundation that it's not that difficult to repair cranes that lose their mate. So I am sure our staff will be looking for the genetically correct male who's distantly related to Ublek, the name of Gee Whiz's mate. And they will try pairing them up. But it remains to be seen if she's ready. But my guess is that the breeding season has started, and she might be quite receptive to having a new mate. That's my guess.
All right. We've got that answered then. Good. Karen in Delafield, it's your turn. Hi, Karen.
Oh, hi. Hi, Larry and guest. Well, I had an interesting experience with a sandhill crane on my property last summer. We live near Nagawicca Lake, and there's a pond below where the cranes come every year to roost. And one day I was having coffee in the morning outside. I heard this odd noise, and there was a crane walking up our driveway and walked right past me about maybe no more than 6-7 feet away, walked over to the deck and flew down to our swimming pool and swam from the deep end to the shallow end and got out. walked up the steps, got out, and went back down into another part of the woods. But I had a feeling that we see them often flying overhead, and maybe the pool looked appealing to it, so checked it out.
Question well, is, was it a hot day?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a hot day.
It was early morning.
That's a great story, Karen. Thanks for sharing that. Oh, my goodness.
That's a Barbara, new one for me.
Yeah, Barbara in Fort Atkinson, it's your turn. Barbara, hi.
Hi. I have an incredible story. About 3 years ago, I work at TopCon in Fort Atkinson, and we always have cranes that come on our property because we're out in the country. We had a pair of cranes. They raised some chicks, and when it came time to leave in the fall, one of them had gotten injured. One of the adults. And so the chicks and the other adult flew away and left her. And she stayed all winter on our property. Some of us tried to bring food for her because she's walking through snow and everything like that. The next spring, the adult came back and they had more chicks. And that fall, she had recovered enough that she flew away with her mate.
Oh, that's a great story.
That's a lovely story.
Oh, thanks for sharing that, Barbara. I love that story. Oh, Jeff in La Crosse wondered why sandhill cranes are so much more numerous than whooping cranes. Rich, you want to comment on that?
Sure.
I'm sure either one of you could.
I'll say a few things, George, can add too. So that whooping cranes and sandhill cranes sort of look pretty alike. They're both cranes, but they have some really important differences in their biology that make a big difference. You know, both of them sunk to pretty low numbers, you know, around 100 years ago or more when we had a lot of market hunting and all, and both sandhills and whoopers were hit very hard. But a few things about the sandhills, important things about them, they often will have two chicks a year. So their population grows faster. Whoopers mostly have only one chick a year. There's exceptions, but mostly sandhills are a little more productive. And sandhills have really adapted to a more general diet, sort of a farm field diet, than whooping cranes. So they have a lot more habitat available. Whooping cranes are showing some signs of having that more general diet, but like where they winter in Texas, where the majority of the population winters, they really have a pretty specialized wetland diet on the coast, except in extreme situations. And sandhill cranes do that beautiful painting that everybody loves to see, where they kind of paint themselves with mud and camouflage themselves nicely. So they're quite good at avoiding predators and hiding their chicks from predators. And whoopers are not quite as adept at that, being over 5 foot tall, large white birds. They kind of stand out more than just about any bird you can imagine. And so we've had more issues with predators as well too. And George maybe will add others, but all that stuff kind of has added up to sandhills, even though they were low numbers too, you know, having really a fantastic recovery here, you know, in the Midwest and in Wisconsin, certainly. And whoopers, they're recovering, but it's a long slog to get them back.
George, anything to add to that?
Yeah, I've been observing a pair of whooping cranes that are nesting in Sauk County, and they do most of their feeding in harvested cornfields where they feed on waste corn in the spring and on earthworms. And they get up in the morning, they do their calling and dancing and sometimes mating and preening their feathers. And where's the corn? Off they fly to the fields, which shows that they're more adaptable than we thought. And just as the sandhills have recovered so beautifully since the 1930s, when Aldo Leopold wrote so beautifully that you may not see them again, we're hoping that the whooping cranes will follow that same path. But they need a lot of hand-holding until they get going.
Yeah, for sure. Well, the foundation has always had a lot of educational opportunities. I always love having you guys on because I learn something every time. You do a great job of educating through the radio. But what, Rich, what have you got going for education opportunities for folks?
Well, a bunch of things. Of course, our tours are a wonderful way to start. So, again, sort of invite everyone to come up. One of the things, we did a lot of pivoting during, you know, the pandemic because we couldn't get out as much and all. And one of the things we started doing is a weekly webinar about our work around the world. And people have really loved those. They're all available through our website. I can get a link for that. But they're we've done them on our work in different countries around the world and our big projects. So you can learn about our work in Myanmar or China or different countries in Africa, like Zambia or Uganda. And they're really fun. And some of them have been different stories about work, like stories about cranes and culture, stories, lots of stories about our sandhills here in Wisconsin. And they're just great ways to learn a lot more. And suddenly we have this kind of treasure trove of webinars of having done them all last year. They're all done with speakers from the places where we work, beautiful photos. So it's really a wonderful way to learn about our work around the world that's readily accessible. And, you know, as we get back to being more live, we'll be back in schools and back doing more public presentations and all the stuff that we normally do around the state and really throughout the country here to connect people with cranes and talk more about crane conservation work all over the place. So we definitely look forward to doing more of that. But I've been so happy with having all of these great new ways to connect during the pandemic when we couldn't see everybody live.
Yeah, absolutely. And so your website address is, I mean, if you just type in the International Crane Foundation, it's probably going to pop up.
It's www.savingcranes.org. And we have, there's a kind of a page on there that you can get to our, all these great webinars, which are actually on YouTube, but that's a way to get into them. So, yeah.
And before I forget it, membership or becoming involved with the International Crane Foundation, let's talk about that for a bit too.
You bet. Well, we are a member organization. We've got somewhere around 9,000 members, I think. And there's lots of ways to become a member. And a lot of people become members by visiting up to our site and learning more of us. But we actually have members all over the world that just connect through our mission and the work that we do. And in addition to getting wonderful tours with your membership, you can learn about the work that we're doing all over. And we do a lot of member exclusive things like different presentations and member moments and things like that to try and connect people in. And we really welcome everyone who's, we like to call ourselves all craniacs, and we welcome all craniacs to join us and learn more about the work and jump in. And, you know, as one caller said earlier, some people connect with us by helping do the crane count, or actually we have a number of wonderful volunteers that monitor whooping cranes on migration for us and all kinds of great ways people help here in the state and by being members. So we really welcome you to learn more and join with us.
Yeah, and it's a great place to visit. I love going to your main office, and I'm really looking forward to this year to seeing all the changes that have taken place. When are you going to be open again? We haven't talked about that either much. I guess we talked about it early, but.
Yeah, so May 1 is our official opening day. It's just a little later than our normal opening in the spring. And as of May 1, we should have just open visitation unless there's a change in status with the pandemic that causes us to put some more restrictions in place. Our website will always have updates and Facebook and all on opening. But yeah, our goal is May 1st, and we're hoping to get lots of people out to see these exhibits. Yeah. They really are. It's really a big facelift. And if you haven't been for a while, I think you'll be really delighted to see all the changes. And a lot more of our exhibits are open air for photographers to get a nice clean shot of the birds. And they're all in wetlands with nice restored prairie all around them. And we had an artist do beautiful murals in the backdrop of all these exhibits of the places where we work. So you can see the black-necked cranes that George takes people to see in Bhutan, in a scene from Bhutan, a mountainous scene from Bhutan, really beautiful paintings. And to me, it kind of brings it all home. They connect people in, they sort of see the cranes eye to eye, and then they learn about the places where we work to save them and the people who do all that work. And it's really fun to learn those stories. And I think people will really enjoy getting all that immersion when you come visit us. So May 1st.
Anne Marie has a question for you from South Milwaukee. Anne Marie, hi.
Hello. I'm a little bit of a birder or bird watcher, and this is actually an anniversary for me because it was St. Patty's Day. I remember, spring is such a crapshoot. You can have a really beautiful day or a lousy day. This was a beautiful day. I was out in my backyard hanging laundry, of all things, and I heard, what? Those cranes sound really weird. And I looked up, and it was a small flock, maybe 7 birds at the most. And it was all sandhills, except in the front was a whooper. I was like, oh, my God. And, we're right on the flyway with the lake, and so I'm really lucky to get that migration experience in the springtime. But, it made me wonder, do these birds hang around together like in their wintering grounds? And I was just a little curious about their biology.
Yeah. George, go ahead.
Yeah, the sandhills, because there are so many sandhill cranes and there's so few whooping cranes, lone hoopers will join up with sandhills if they can't find a hooper. But usually the whooping cranes fly separately in very small groups, a pair with a chick, a few younger birds. But sometimes you can see them with sandhill cranes. They're sort of opportunistic. You were very lucky to see that. I'm so glad you had that experience.
And they won't mate with each other.
No, they don't hybridize under normal circumstances. They imprint when they're very young on what they see. And a young whooping crane sees a big white bird. So when they're adult, they want to see white birds. And the same with the sandhill crane for gray birds. So imprinting in early life in cranes is extremely important. And when we raise them in captivity, we want to make sure that they don't have too much contact with humans or they'll get hung up on humans.
Yeah, and that is not a good thing. Well, thank you very much, Anne Marie, for that observation. Appreciate it very much. And George and Rich, here we are, out of time. Thank you so much for being with us today. Looking forward to that opening on May 1st. And I hope people will go to your website and take a look at the webinars because I haven't seen them. So I'm going to go take a look myself. And I really appreciate having you both with us. I hope we get a chance to do this again soon. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Larry. It's great to be here. And our staff sent a quick ICF Crane Tube is how you find us on YouTube, too, if you want to find those videos. They were listening in and jumping on it. So it's ICF Crane Tube.
All right.
Come out and learn more about us. So.
Larry, thank you so much. I enjoy your programs, especially your gardening talk.
Well, and we've got another gardening talk coming up in a couple of days. But tomorrow, we'll be talking with a chef who writes about vegetarian cooking. That'll be coming up. But in the meantime, thanks to George and Rich, and thank you for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store. I'm Larry Mealer.